Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal and shop authentic handbags, watches, sneakers, streetwear, and jewelry from eBay, backed by Authenticity Guarantee. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hello and welcome to this very special episode of Still Watching WandaVision. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I am Anthony Bresnigan, special correspondent from Los Angeles. A very special episode, Joanna. Look at us.
It's true. A very special episode of our very own.
Should we append like one of those like, you know, the more you know kind of things at the very end? Like, remember how like G.I. Joe? They couldn't just sell you a toy. They had to give you like a little life lesson. Like, don't set your baby sister on fire, for God's sakes.
Don't climb
into a stranger's trunk. Get out of there.
This is a special episode we're doing before the finale. We solicited some, you know, questions, comments, concerns, theories from folks, mostly based on a tweet I wrote. We got so much email. Oh my gosh, you guys.
Thank you guys. I love hearing the responses and everything and hearing that people and their kids have theories. I really enjoy that. That's really
wonderful. We got so many emails from kids. It makes me really happy. So yeah, we got a ton of emails. Obviously, we cannot get to all of them, and I'm really sorry about this. It's really painful that I can't answer every single email. So thank you for sending every single email. They're all great. We've collected things that we think we can give some sort of informative answer to. It is no mark of quality of your email. But So we just wanted to do one last hurrah before the finale, before we have the answers, presumably, to some of these questions. And before we get into that, though, I want to really quickly say something, which is that one of the questions we got a bunch from people is, what are we doing next, right? Are we covering Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is going to start, I think there's like a 1 week gap, and then it's going to start on Disney Plus the following Thursday midnight Pacific time. The answer is we do not know exactly what we're doing next, neither on Still Watching nor in general. What a mood for 2021. But
the magic eight ball answer would be answer cloudy. Ask again later.
but Anthony and I do want, like, you know, we saw this when we did The Mandalorian. We're seeing it when we're doing this show. We've seen a big response to this, like, thing that we do, that we've done our whole careers, which is, like, try to talk about nerdy stuff in a way that feels friendly to people who maybe haven't spent all day with her nose, you know, down a book. So, and is fun for people who have spent their day with their nose down a book. So, if you want to see, I guess I'll say this, you can email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com, and let us know what you would want. Like, if you want more of this kind of stuff from Anthony and me, tell us what you would want us to do. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a video? Like, do you want us to perform it on the street? Like, what do you want from us? Anthony, do you have anything to add to that?
No miming. We're not going to do any miming for you. We're not going to be, you know, the robot on the corner that you put a coin in our hat, but we will, anything pop culture related. You know, we have to be careful, Joanna. We've got so many questions here. Like, I think, we've got to choose our next steps wisely because there's a lot of stuff out there to digest. I think the nice thing about this moment in movie and TV history is that we're, you know, the creators are giving you stuff that you really need to think about, and that's fun. That because it adds a little extra life beyond just watching it and then moving on. Is that it's something people care about and think about, and I don't know. I'm with you in that I want to focus our efforts on helping them digest those things and understand them. And it's a crazy mixed up world out there, even crazier in the Marvel universe. And if we can be your guide through that, that makes us very happy.
Yeah. And it's fun. We have fun.
Yeah.
So let me actually, we're going to start. I was going to start as small, but actually I've decided to start as big.
Go big.
And I want to float to you my final, like, big brain theory about something we might see in the finale.
All right. I'm ready. I'm braced.
It's based on a question. All right. I'm going to send you right now. We're on Skype right now, just for you guys to have a peek behind the curtain. I'm going to send you an image that someone has collected of Wanda, a preview maybe of a costume we're going to see, right? We saw this moment in the penultimate episode where Wanda sees this figure in the glowing yellow light of the Mind Vision, right? The Mind Stone. And it's the outline of a classic Scarlet Witch figure. And some people have sort of recalibrated the image, adjusted the balance so that you can see a bit better that is definitely Elizabeth Olsen in some kind of new costume. And, you know, they've put it together with some, you know, the character posters that they released had these little like TV monitors, as part of the character posters. So we could see little snippets of costumes and stuff like that there. And so they put it together with some little snippets of a costume we've not seen before on Wanda. You know, there's like a belt. And, you know, a décolletage, I will say, the sort of chest plate, area of it. And it matches up with what we see in the Mind Stone. So this is probably a final costume we were going to see on her in the finale, right? Could be a reasonable guess. But here's my theory based on this costume. If you look closely at the little snippets that they put in those TV monitors, it's like a classic maroon color that it's a little bit more maroon than something we've seen on Wanda before. But what's really interesting to me is this, there's this sort of like pebbling texture to it, which matches the, and has never been something Wanda's worn before. And it matches the kind of pebbling texture on Vision's costume, as does sort of this breastplate aspect that's right by her collarbone is similar to what's on Vision's costume. So that goes with my theory that perhaps in order to like fully come into her powers, which she will need to stop something or do something, she's going to have to reabsorb the Vision that she made from her own self, from her own powers, in order to be at full juice. And that's going to be obviously a devastating thing for her to do. But in doing so, she will become WandaVision. What do you think?
I like that theory. I can see it in the costume. Definitely a similarity there. And I also think thematically it holds because one of the most powerful lines from the whole episode, or from the whole season, the whole series, was Vision saying, "What is grief if not love persevering?" And like, some people have made fun of that line. What's wrong with those people? God, what are you heartless ghouls? Just enjoy something for once. But like,
I missed that discourse entirely until I saw Chris Miller of Lord and Miller tweeting about it. He's like, I know people are dunking on this. I was like, oh, they are? Oh, I'm on the right side of Twitter that I did not see people dunking on this, but I believe it.
I mean, like, so, making some jokes is fine, but like, it's actually a beautiful line. Although I did like the joke that, like, what is grief except some of the letters from Garfield rearranged?
Like, I mean, the memes are funny. You know, yeah. The memes can be funny and the line can be resonant.
But the dunking on it, I'm not good for. But so thematically, yeah. What I was going to say is, you know, I think anybody who's lost someone that they love knows that that cliche of, well, they live inside you. Like, whatever your beliefs are about prior life or an afterlife,
exactly.
Or like,
exactly.
What lies beyond or reincarnation or any of that, like, people are free to believe the things they want to believe. But one thing that is, I think, undeniably true is that part of the resolution of the grieving process is the feeling that you are carrying a part of that person with you. If you think about them all the time, like, I have people that I love who've been gone a long time, and they're people I think about every day. And I realize that because I think of them every day in so many different circumstances, they really are with me and they really are a part of who I am on an ongoing basis. So that notion of fusing with the person that you miss, I think is very beautiful, and I think it's true. It's like that E.E. Cummings poem, you know, I carry your heart. I carry it in my heart.
Exactly.
And, you know,
I was thinking of that poem, actually, when I was coming up with that theory.
Look at us. Poetry. We do it for the money.
I'm going to read this email from Rachel that I think helps reinforce exactly what you're talking about, that emotional thematic resonance of something like that potentially happening. Rachel writes, I recently lost someone close to me. When I struggled to make sense of it, my therapist told me, no matter what, you will carry them in your heart. This isn't the answer I wanted, of course, but there is truth in it. And last week's episode struck a chord because of it. When creating Westview, Wanda's magic burst out of her chest, not her hands. It was clear that the yellow strings of Vision came directly from her heart. Do her powers ever manifest that way in the comics? If not, I think this revelation shows us that Westview Vision is the version that Wanda remembers. He embodies the part that she holds dear, sweetly romantic, punny, humor, innocence, decency. This is why he doesn't know about the Avengers or Thanos, because what Wanda treasured were the little moments they shared, like the flashback we saw in last week's episode. At the end, I think Wanda will have to let Vision go while acknowledging he will still be with her, because this version of Vision isn't the one we all knew. He's Wanda's Vision. Rachel.
Oh, well done, Rachel. You're making our jobs easy here and a little bit harder, because now we don't look as good because you came up with a really beautiful way of expressing that. But like, I think that's very true, don't you? That's and also I think if you consider that Agatha Harkness's big question is, how did you do this, right? Agatha is all about book learning, like, right? Her whole thing, the reason she fell out with her coven is, as her mother says, like, you tried to learn things above your age and station, right? Which we found to be such like magic gatekeeping at the time. But she's book learning. She's studying and researching. And I think I compared her to Salieri in last week's episode. And that was his thing too, is how can I know all the mechanics of the creation of symphony and harmony and music, and yet you just do it. Like, you just do it intuitively. And I think what Agatha is missing is that she's coming at it from a very clinical, she's coming at magic from a very clinical way of understanding it. And Wanda just feels it. She's just a natural. And literally, this magic comes from her heart. And I don't think Agatha, not to say Agatha doesn't really have a heart, or clearly she cares about Senor Scratchy, but like, she just doesn't understand that it doesn't come from the fingertips. It doesn't come from the muscle memory or the skills or the knowledge or the books you have. It's something else, something soulful.
Yeah. Let me read really quickly a companion email from David about Vision's heart. I have these two emails labeled as Wanda's Heart and Vision's Heart. David wrote, I just wanted to chime in with an observation I had on a rewatch of episode 8. It occurs to me that the heart drawn on the calendar from the first episode of the show is probably a callback to the heart that Vision drew around his note to Wanda with a deed to their new property in Westview. It was one of the last things Wanda saw before creating the Hex, starting with the 1950s era that the pilot is set in, and as the emotional catalyst for her creating, for her creation of the illusion. The heart was probably still haunting her at that point. She may have recontextualized it into a sitcom shenanigan, like the kind she would have enjoyed with her parents as a child in Sokovia, namely the boss is coming to dinner, rather than let herself remember what it really represented. I might be reaching here, but it's still a devastating possibility to consider. Poor Wanda. So,
I like that too.
Vision's heart, Wanda's heart. Vision's heart, I think we saw one, there was like another heart on a calendar. We saw two hearts on the calendar and then the heart on the deed. So I just think this idea of like, I think I already used this quote, but to quote Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Fleabag again, this is a love story, right? Like ultimately that's what, this is a story about grief and a story about love with a bunch of like fun Marvel shenanigans and sitcom shenanigans shoved in there. So, yeah, just thinking about all of that. Yeah, go ahead.
I also think this is key to the success of the Marvel Cinematic Universe overall. There's so much discussion about like Marvel and DC as there has been, into time immemorial, right? Like that what makes one thing work, what makes another thing work, who's on top in terms of box office or audience connection, and all that aside, I think it's pretty clear to me that one of the things that makes Marvel function so well is that the audience feels deep connection for these characters. What's the secret there, right? What's the secret ingredient that Kevin Feige and his team have come up with? And it's different, and maybe this feeds into another one of our questions on the list. It's different than the other Marvel TV shows that have been created. And again, I'm not attacking their quality, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, the Netflix shows like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Daredevil, like they all, have good things about them. Maybe not Iron Fist, but like, not my favorite one there, but I think, the thing about the movies and now WandaVision that works is you care about the characters because they have people in their lives that they care about. Like, you care about Steve Rogers because he cares so much about Bucky Barnes, right? And that friendship makes you feel stronger for both of them. That when you give characters people they love, the audience loves them in return. And you get a sense of who they are because of what they care about. And I think that's been a real strength of the Marvel Universe.
And I think that's why one of the main lines that came out of Endgame, I mean, I Am Iron Man was one of them, but I Love You 3000, I think, was even more, right?
Yeah.
It's about, like, a man's love for his kid. The email that Anthony was alluding to is this one from Hale in Milwaukee, who writes, what was the corporate history of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and its blending with the movies? Was this considered a success? And is it similar to the way you're talking about WandaVision impacting future movies? So just a little bit of history. We heard from a bunch of people who are sort of new to the Marvel Universe. They thought Marvel maybe wasn't for them, and WandaVision has kind of hooked them. So we got a bunch of questions about, like, where do I go from now? But also people sort of curious about what came before. Because I think there are some people who are trying now to go back and watch all the movies, which is, of course, exactly what Disney Plus wants you to do.
You've fallen into the trap.
But then they're like, okay, but then do I have to go watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in order to understand what's going on? So the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing is one of the trickier ones because it was the Marvel TV show that tried the hardest to connect back to the films. You know, you had characters like Nick Fury or Lady Sif from S.W.O.R. Obviously, Agent Coulson's from the movies was central to the show. So they try to sort of make it interact. And there is, at least one episode where you have to, like, watch the episode in order to, like, understand Age of Ultron. And we should mention that Joss Whedon, who is sort of, helping to shepherd the MCU at the time, the show was created by his brother and his sister-in-law. So, like, it was all very in the family. But at the same time, sorry, hopefully this isn't boring, Marvel TV at that time was a different division from Marvel Studios. So Kevin Feige, whose name you might have heard us mention, runs Marvel Studios. Jeff Loeb was running Marvel TV. And so...
So Feige's name, was it on the credits, like, as an executive producer or something? Or was it not at all?
Possibly. But
so if it was, that just means, like, you know, that's more of a salutation than a real
in name only.
Yeah.
And what we've learned more and more, what is true, is that there was actually quite a bit of tension between those two divisions in terms of, like, the MCU, the Marvel movies getting to dictate, you know, for example, let's say, the Kree, which are characters in Captain Marvel, was a storyline that that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. wanted to do, or they also wanted to do in humans. Like, they wanted to do these various things, and the MCU, the Marvel movies, were like, no, you can't do that, and you can't do that, because we have earmarked that as a potential thing we want to do in the future. So you can't do that, and you can't do that. And so while there was some overlap, there was also a great deal of tension. What we are in the – and then Netflix was almost completely separate. Like, they would reference the Battle of New York, but, like, almost completely separate. We're in a new era now where corporate roles have shifted. Once again, I'm thinking of, like, the 11 and 12-year-olds who listen to this, and if they care. Sorry. But, like, the corporate roles
have shifted. Hey, kids, you asked about corporate history. Now sit down.
The corporate roles have shifted, so Kevin Feige is now in charge of Marvel Television as well, or at the very least, the offerings on Disney+. So the way in which these shows overlap with the films is going to be much more... In beautiful harmony, because the same person is running these two ships. Did I do that right, Anthony?
I think so. I think you did a great job there. You left off one example though that I think is really illustrates the tension. So they create this show called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And what do the, you know, for television, and what does the Marvel movie universe do? They destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, as the show is premiering, Captain America and the Winter Soldier comes out that, like, demolishes S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's like, okay, I guess we don't have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. And then that put those characters kind of on the run, right? Like, they were just sort of like now, like, sort of a scattershot thing because S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't really exist. But, like, if you need an example of, like, the tension between the two divisions, it's like, hey, we just built this sandcastle. And the other team came through and said, sandcastles are banned. Like, just drove over it.
Yeah. So it's very different, I guess, is the answer now. And sort of someone asked us, here we go, Brooke. Brooke is asking, because, you know, there's a ripple effect, right? We got an email from someone asking, like, if we felt duped by how much this show is setting up for the rest of the MCU. Jason wrote in and asked, like, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on your evolving perception of WandaVision from quirky one-off to potentially setting up an entire series of multiverse movies, opening the door to the X-Men, springboarding a character that could go toe-to-toe with Captain Marvel, shifting MCU narratives away from the military-industrial complex, etc. Do you feel happily misled from the beginning? I'm not mad at all about most of the ways in which they're trying to, like, lift onto new and different projects in the MCU. I think the show has enough of its own thing going on. This is the balance I think was off in Age of Ultron, where they were trying to do too many offshoots and not enough core story. But I don't think I could make that argument about the core story here. But we have this email from Brooke who's asking, with the multiverse, like, presuming that that's what we're going to get in the finale, a multiverse, meaning, like, if you've never listened to the Anthony section of the show before, meaning, like, if you think of the movie Into the Spider-Verse, that's a multiverse, right? You've got different characters from different universes, different realities sort of interacting. With the multiverse, does Marvel lose the finality of death or any catastrophic event, like a Thanos snap? With time travel, if something can be reversed, is there an impact on the story they can tell? Like, are we introducing storytelling concepts that diminish the finality of the impact of storytelling in the future? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I don't have any special knowledge about where they're going, but I do think they are clearly steering the story into this multiverse thing. And you make a great point that, like, when anything is possible, nothing matters. So how does this hold together? And I think if I were to guess, again, no inside information here, but I would guess that part of the story going forward for Phase 4 would be sort of straightening out that timeline, like in terms of like stopping anything from being possible, because what you don't want in your universe is like chaos. And, mm-hmm. you know, they call it chaos magic for a reason. It's not called super orderly magic, right? Like it's like, okay, it's anything is possible. Multiple versions of you, multiple versions of everything. Up is down, black is white, the sky is green, the grass is blue. Like, I'm going to start singing a Dolly Parton song soon. But like, it's, I think very much like, I think that my guess is the Marvel Universe will be like, okay, we've got this branched reality. Now, how do we smooth it down? How do we brush this tangle of wild hair and make it, not so chaotic? And that, I think if you embrace the multiverse, like everything's possible, anything goes, yes, you run into trouble. But I think if you're like, let's catch all these random threads and try to weave them back together, then you've got a Phase 4.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
It's interesting. One of our, I don't think I copied this email over, but one of the emails was like, was there a Thanos snap in every multiverse? Is there an orange, blue, green vision somewhere out there in the world? I was just thinking about how someone was talking, I forget, I did not check where the interview was, but Robert Downey Jr. recently said something like, never say never, about Iron Man coming back. Which is just sort of like, yeah, the multiverse is open. You could have a different multiverse Tony Stark anytime Robert Downey Jr. got bored in his retirement. You know what I mean? Like, the options are there. Mm-hmm. So, but what does it mean for the finality of death? I sort of famously get a little fussy if too many deaths are reversed or undone in something. Not like something like the snap, but like, you know, if too many people come back from the dead, I get a little like, all right, what'd you make me cry for in the first place then? Like, you know?
You start to not trust the future deaths, yeah. Right? Where you're okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, So speaking of death, let's do. Really quick, more morbid thought question.
This one's for you, kids.
Well, okay. Yeah, no, but that's a question. This is a show on Disney Plus that's meant to appeal to people of all ages. We've seen death before in the MCU. Is this the kind of show that needs to end with a death to feel impactful? We've seen, you know, or is something like the reabsorption of a vision that she created from herself in the first place enough of a like lasting consequence? Anyway, the question we got from a couple people is, will someone die? And here are the players they put on the board: Vision, Agatha, Director Hayward, Billy and Tommy, which are the kids, and then Pietro as a Quicksilver. So I'll go first really quickly and say Vision reabsorbed. I'm still on that beat. Billy and Tommy, I think we're going to see them aged up to teens. I think we're going to get some teens in this finale. And they're going to, whether or not they're going to vanish in some way, but I don't think they're going to die. Pietro's Quicksilver, I think we're keeping Evan Peters. Agatha, we had a lot of questions about Agatha continuing, so that's a to be continued. But I should say, even if she dies, Agatha has appeared in so many comics as a ghost that actually could be really fun. Thinking of, yeah, like, have you ever seen those films like Topper? You know, like a, like sort of like a fun haunting from Catherine Hahn. I think it could be really fun. And Hayward, I would certainly be happy to see him go. What do you think, Anthony?
I think Hayward in my Deadpool is right at the top. Like, okay, he's the bad guy that you actually don't like. Like Agatha and Agnes is really fun. Like, I don't want her to go, even though she's a bad person and she killed that little, and she killed, what was the dog's name again?
Sparky.
I killed Sparky too. Like, she, in fact, it's made me seek out other Catherine Hahn movies and TV shows that I haven't watched before because I just enjoy her performance so much in this. And, so I don't want her to go, and nothing against the actor who plays Hayward, but like, you know, he's doing a good job of making him seem like a jerk. So, you know, if comeuppance comes to him, then so be it. If for no other reason than he denied Monica her promotion when she came back from the dead, like he's a mean guy. And I think he's also duplicitous and he lies and he's misled the audience. So we don't trust him or like him. And if somebody has to go, I could see him going. I do agree with you that I think the whole point of this is coming to terms with grief. So I don't think Vision makes it out of it in the form that we originally know him. Like, I don't think it's right. Like, oh, and he's back, right?
It's about letting go, right?
I think this is about saying goodbye. So I also think that's good because Vision as a character, and he's one of my son's favorite characters, if not his absolute favorite character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But I find him as a character, like, there's not a lot of places for him to go. He's a good guy. He's learning about what it means to be human. And I think this is one of those lessons, right? So I don't know, like, how much further you can push that character. I know in the comics he does, he's been around for ages. But, like, at least in terms of this story arc, he's learned what it means to be human. And part of being human is that you're temporary. So, this is a downer. I'm sorry, kids.
what a data from Star Trek story to learn.
Yes. Yeah. Well, look, very similar, right?
We got an email from Catherine asking sort of like what's next for Vision. And then she came up with the idea of, like, because Vision can't exist outside the Hex, maybe if Wanda gave Vision all of her Mind Stone energy, like all the Mind Stone energy that she absorbed, but she still had her like base magic. We understand that she has like an innate magical power that was in, like, you know, then they gave her some Wheaties and now she's like super powered, right? But if she gave her Mind Stone energy away to Vision in some way, could that result in a Wanda that is like a Wanda and a Vision that are less powerful than the versions we had in the MCU? The versions that we had in the movies, I've always said, were too overpowered to exist in the movies. So could there be a happy solution at the end of this where we get a version of Vision, maybe like the White Vision, maybe, you know, who doesn't remember Wanda, so she still has to like let go of the vision she knew or something like that, and a vision of Wanda and a version of Wanda who is less magically powered. They're balanced. It's like two holes. You take away one, you split the powers between the two of them, you've got half powered individuals who can maybe coexist aside, you know, like Falcon. Mm-hmm. Just has a nice mechanical set of wings. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. What do you think of that thought?
Yeah, I'm trying to digest it all. Like, I think these characters, one thing we have to remember is that these characters are a little bit, I mentioned temporary in the last thing I said, right? Like, in terms of like human beings, our lives are temporary. But I also think that these characters, when they mean a lot to you, they also have to, you have to feel like they could change or say goodbye at any time, you know? Yeah. And that makes them matter a little bit more. Like, one of the things with the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, for example, that I noticed as the stories went on, is that, like, they would have these sword fights, and they were very orchestrated and choreographed and dazzling. They'd be swinging from ropes and on little high beams and narrow bars. But I was like, I know what's going to happen here. Like, so we're just sort of passing time. And it's not that I thought Jack Sparrow was going to get, like, stabbed through the heart and die halfway through the first movie. But there's just, like, a sense, at least, of danger that's absent from the way things are staged. And the way things are staged in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, you know, they make three movies generally. Thor is the one exception because I feel like they just got that character right, so they're not ready to give up that toy yet. But they play, right. The way I've described it in some of my past writing is they play rough with their toys. They aren't keeping their toys in the box on the shelf, preserving them in perpetuity. Like, they're breaking the arms off and scuffing them and burying them in the mud. Like, they're playing with them and making memories with them. And so I don't know if I'm fully answering what you were going for, but I think, you know, change and evolution for the characters, it involves sometimes ending those characters. And I think it ends up changing them. And so therefore they are not exactly who we wound up with, you know, in terms of her powers. I do think she has to be deep. You can't have an all-powerful character. Again, if everything's possible, nothing matters. That's an old saying, kind of a cliche. But you have to have – that's one of the problems with Superman, right, is that he's too powerful. So in movies, you could just have him stop whatever. You know he's going to win. So you have to find ways to, like, weaken him to create a little bit of tension. So – In terms of her, I think she's going to progress. She's going to go forward, but will she be the villain in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness? Is that vision, so to speak, that she has when she's just the peasant girl confronted with the Mind Stone for the first time? Is that
you're asking if we're going to get Dark Phoenix in?
Yeah, well, basically. Sort of. I mean, yeah, is she? What I'm going for, I'm rambling a little. Sorry, but like, I think with somebody like WandaVision or with Wanda, Scarlet Witch, I think if she were to become so powerful that she could stop any incident from happening, then that character ceases to be useful as a storytelling device. But that's a great villain, you know, is that she can stop anything. So how do you stop her? How do you bring her back down to earth and humanize her a little bit? I don't know. Am I getting at all at what you were asking? Or
no, I mean, okay? I think everything you're saying is fine. And there are days when I thought maybe that's where they were going. I just do think that there's been too much time spent on empathy for Wanda to then have her swerve into villainy.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think
it was a possibility at one point, but I don't think after especially after last week, this sort of tour through her traumas, that is something that they are going to give us. It's certainly
the
something
best villains
they've done a lot
are the
in
ones
the comics,
who are sympathetic, but, right? Yeah. I think the best villains are the best villains are the ones that are a bit sympathetic, and I think we've exhausted the villain who's like human beings are. are the disease, right? we've had that in a bunch of Marvel stories now. And I think finding somebody who maybe is like, I'm pursuing my children through the multiverse. I'm trying to find the kids that I created. And rewatching last week's episode really reminded me, that the shows that she watches with her family, you know, there's the Dick Van Dyke show about the walnuts, which I haven't seen, but apparently that's a dream that they're having.
Yeah.
So which is what the hex is, right? It's just a dream. It's something she's imagined and created. And then the Brady Bunch episode they're watching, little Cindy Brady. That's the little one's name, right? Cindy?
Yep.
Marsha, Jan, and Cindy. You know, somebody's saying to Cindy, like, that her doll is just stuffing and sawdust and isn't real.
Yeah.
And all that. It's a little on the nose. You know, I can't believe we didn't talk about it in the last episode. But, like these fake kids that she has are real to her. They're projections of something she believes. And I think you're right. They're going to continue to exist. I don't know if they're going to become teenagers or whether, you know, two lost little boys in the void of the multiverse is a more powerful storytelling device. But I think the story of them and whatever happens to them is going to continue on into other stories. Like, I don't think we're going to get complete resolution in this.
Absolutely.
Next
episode. And I think that something that I was thinking about is, you know, that scene in the Modern Family episode where the milk container keeps glitching. And one of the glitches is like a milk container with like a missing child on the back of it. And I was like, is that a missing child? I mean, that's just like an 80s sort of illusion thing anyway. But like, is that missing child in the milk carton thing? Is that just about the boys going missing in this last episode? Right? The boys are missing. Agnes has them somewhere. Or is it about the boys going missing in the future of the story? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or is it just a milk carton? All right. So let's
a little bit of foreshadowing there. A little bit of
could be. I mean, they love sitting that stuff in, and we'll get to one of my favorites soon. This email comes from Niall in San Francisco. And Niall writes, I was wondering what you both think would be in a. Okay, so let's say Wanda isn't the villain. I hear what you're saying, that there's a way to do it where it's an empathetic journey for her that nonetheless is causing too much chaos in the universe that Doctor Strange has to stop. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think there is a way they could do that. But let's say it's not. Let's say something happens like she uses all of her power. She solves whatever crisis, you know, she solves whatever hex related crisis at the end of the finale by letting go, by doing whatever. So she's left this extraordinary powerful person with probably a bunch of regrets for how her power manifested and how that impacted this town of New Jersey. So maybe someone binds her powers, you know, maybe something, whatever, and she has to go learn from Doctor Strange. Maybe she's afraid to ever use them again. And so she doesn't want to use her powers at all. That's a similar-ish story to what we saw with, like, the Lagos thing in the movies. And so Dr. Strange has to teach her how to use her powers again, but this time, like, be more control of them or whatever. Like, let's say that something like that happens. Niall writes in, I was wondering what you both think would be an appropriate consequence or punishment, although I hate the word, for Wanda's actions towards the citizens of Westview. I see this as the main dilemma for the writers, especially with people knowing she is set to appear in Dr. Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Love the show. So what, you know, if she's not a villain, what, I mean, losing her kids? Question mark. Like, what do you think, Anthony?
So, I think this is a great question. It's a little like, yeah, you swallow a little hard when it comes to what punishment does she get? Like, but I think the writers have very cleverly informed us that while Wanda has definitely been disruptive to the citizens of Westview, she hasn't done anything that's unforgivable, right? Because you remember that line where Pietro says, you know, I kind of wondered where the kids were, right? You just kind of had the kids in a stasis, and then they get to go out and play at Halloween, right?
Right.
And it's cool how you've kept, like, couples together and the personalities aren't that much different. So she's not, like, puppeteering people and having them do things that are unethical or evil. She's not really, I mean, she's hurting them, but she's not being cruel, right?
She thinks she's not. She thinks she's doing this in a way, but when we've seen people wake up, they've woken up in a like a trauma state.
Yeah, they're like, "Whoa, you know, this hurts. This doesn't feel good." But she's not doing anything, at least in terms of like crime and punishment, where you're like, "Oh, she's got to pay for that," right? I think she owes these guys an apology for forcing them to be part of her like shadow play. But I think I don't know that she'll be. So, there are other things like killing the dog. That crosses a line, at least narratively speaking.
We did get an email about this, so I'll read it really quickly. Zach says, we're going to talk about Agatha next. Zach says, I know some people think Agatha will be a grayish character or somewhat redeemed, but for me, killing Sparky is Thanos-level villainy. So Zach is not interested in redemption arcs for Agatha.
There's always a point in the story where like the villain goes so far that it can't be taken back, you know? And I know, like, in my own creative writing, I've tried to create scenarios where, okay, I need something bad to happen here, but it can't be so bad that it can't be covered up or the person has to, like, go to jail for it, right? They have to redeem themselves or atone. Like, I think Wanda has to atone. They've done a good job of setting that up. But I don't think she's done anything that, like, crosses the line where you're like, that's unforgivable and you've lost the audience. Like, they are no longer on your side. And, like, I think anybody who's written fiction, you know, sometimes experiences this. Sometimes you go too far. You're like, oh, I've got to make the good guy seem really bad in this scene. Yes, and now you've made them completely unforgivable. Like, we can't go any further on this journey with them. And so I feel like that's sort of where we are with Agatha. There's a question about whether she's fully a bad guy. I know we have I don't know if you want to read it, but the remarks about how sometimes a therapist can seem like a villain because they're pushing you. Next.
Yeah. So this email comes from Sam. And Sam says, keeping in mind that WandaVision is supposed to be a study in grief and trauma, Wanda's and the audience perspective of Agatha matches what some in therapy experience early on in the experience. Therapists can seem like they are the villain, questioning your decisions and prodding deep into your life. However, they're really trying to help you, and the pain is a necessary step. This fits well with what occurred in episode 8. Wanda, the patient, was walked through her past trauma memories by Agatha, the therapist, who seems like the villain, but is really just trying to save Wanda from a greater force, either herself or Nightmare/Mephisto. That's from Sam. So I just want to read this quote, this really interesting quote I saw from Jack Schaefer. Jack Schaefer, who's you know, the showrunner on the show, wrote the Black Widow film and is just like a really interesting figure, I think, for the future of Marvel. Jack said this, my kids are really obsessed with good guys and bad guys, Schaefer said of her two preschool-aged children. Sometimes I explain to them every good guy can be a bad guy and vice versa. It's complicated, but that's sort of lost on them. That's one thing that I think can be explored more in the future. I would hope that there are ever-increasing moves towards the gray and towards complexity. So what that means to me is that Jack is not as interested in it was literally the devil, like whatever, that Jack maybe wants to give us a story of these two women who have had their own, you know, because as we mentioned, I think in last week's episode, like Agnes's origin story that we see, that's an awful, awful, awful thing to have gone through with your own mother, killing your own mother because your mother was going to kill or at least bind you or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that's, and whether we could see these two women who have gone through these awful experiences, like sort of come together and find a place of healing in some way is interesting to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I think all of that's very interesting. And it's true. I like the line about how like the person sometimes, you know, let's say not a villain, but an antagonist in your life can push you to reexamine yourself and or make you feel a little competitive and try to do better. But I think also you do ultimately come down on a line, right? So even in a gray area, there's darker gray and lighter gray. You know? And I think Agatha, and this will maybe lead into one of our other questions. You know, somebody said, well, Wanda keeps referring to her as a lifesaver. Will she all end up being a good guy, good person? because Wanda keeps referring to her as a lifesaver. And I think although she has elements of her personality and past that are sympathetic, she's ultimately chosen to do the thing, to cross the lines that Wanda wasn't willing to cross. Like, she's, I think, much more aware of the harm she's causing and the way she's exploiting and using people, including Wanda. So, you know, Wanda's a little bit delusional throughout this. She's playing the part and she's trying to go with the flow and she's lying to herself. She's puppeteering herself as much as anybody, right? Like, it's not like she's the one breaking character and going, oh, what do you want me to say here? Or no, you're supposed to do that. She's just going with the flow. So I think she's trying to dissociate a little from reality, or she has dissociated from reality, but Agnes hasn't. You know, Agnes is aware. She knows she's kidnapped these kids. She knows she's, what she's doing. So I do think she falls on the spectrum of being malevolent. I don't know what kind of punishment she might get for that.
Let's start saying consequences instead.
Consequences. Yeah. What consequences she will face for that.
Yeah.
But I think she will face some, and she's the one consuming the magic. So, can we go to the question about the lifesaver?
I'm on it. You keep reading my mind about where I want to go next. All right. So this one comes from Meta. And Meta wrote in and said, my 10-year-old daughter, huge fan of both WandaVision and the podcast, noticed that in several episodes, Wanda says, Agnes, you're a lifesaver. She suspects that this means Agnes will, in fact, one way or another, save Wanda's life. She was desperate for me to email this to you. So I went back and I rewatched all the episodes just as like prep for this podcast and for the finale. And I clocked all the time. So episode 1, Agnes, you're a lifesaver. Episode 5, Agnes, you're a lifesaver. Episode 7, you're a lifesaver. But also episode 1, Agnes, you're so naughty. So, you know, naughty and a lifesaver, I think, is sort of summing up our Agnes assessment here. So what do you think? I mean, first of all, brilliant observation from a 10-year-old listener. Love it. Thank you so much for that email. It made my week. What do you think, Anthony?
Yeah. So shout out to Meta's 10-year-old daughter for noticing this, because I do think that it's deliberate. And I think it's the kind of thing you're meant to catch on a rewatch and go, oh, that's an ironic line, right? Mm-hmm. The same way when she's in Agnes form, when she first meets Wanda and she goes, charmed, right?
Yeah.
You and I've already talked about that. So little lines like that, I think, are meant to carry a little, some dramatic irony where you're like, oh, once you know what's actually up, they play a different way. So kudos to you for catching that. But I would say, maybe she ends up, you know, doing the right thing, saving her. Like, I could see Agnes wanting to stepping in the way and taking the hit, maybe. Let's say Hayward finally gets one of his missiles in a position where he could destroy Wanda. Mm-hmm. I could see Agnes saying, no, this powerful witch needs to live, and sacrificing herself, right? Because her commitment to magic is so absolute that she would want to protect this rare bird, you know? In that way, you get consequences for her actions, but also she does something heroic. So maybe you're right. That could happen, but I was also thinking that line could be read another way. Like, some of these lines, I think, are special because you could turn them. They're like a little cube, right? You could look at it in three different dimensions and different angles. Agnes is literally a lifesaver, right? She's nourishing herself off of the magic and life force of the people around her. So she's like a lifesaver. Like, she's like a life hoarder. She's collecting it. And so maybe that's what it means, but I would not be surprised if Meta's daughter turns out to be right, that at a critical moment, villainous Agnes, who poisoned poor Sparky, redeems herself a little bit by stepping in and protecting our girl Wanda.
Sparky feels like...
He's not real.
He's just he's Stardust. It's fine. Okay. The... I wanted to, yeah, that makes me want to branch off into another quick question, which is like, which you reminded me of, this idea of what is the Scarlet Witch? So I just want to go over this because actually our editor, Katie Rich, was like messaging me about this. Katie's my favorite person to like ask me questions about these nerdy shows because she truly does not have any background on it. So she helps me know what like someone might be thinking. And she was like, why is it special? Like, she hadn't clocked that the phrase Scarlet Witch had never been used in the films. And she sort of missed that exchange between Hayward and Wu earlier in the season when they were going like, so does she have any other nicknames? Nope, not a one, not a single one. We don't call her some sort of colored sorcerer thing. Nope, nope, never called her that in the movies. If you go back and check, we haven't. So Scarlet Witch, and I think, and also Quicksilver, both of those names were never used in the films. I have to wonder if maybe that has to do with the Fox ownership of the characters. Because even characters like Black Widow and Hawkeye, they found ways to use those code names in the film. So for the most part, those character code names have been used in the films, but not for Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. So that gives them an opportunity, right? To be like, okay, well, we can make the revelation of the phrase Scarlet Witch mean something else. So I was thinking about that old commercial, the commercial from episode 3, I think it is, which is Hydra Soak, which is, Unlock the Goddess Within. And that phrasing had always bothered me because I'm like, why did they use the word goddess?
Yeah.
Like, I understand why in commercial speak, but they're being so careful with their language here. So why did they use the word goddess? So is the Scarlet Witch, I mean, what seems to me to be clear in this revelation here at the end when Agnes says you're the Scarlet Witch, it means like you're some sort of, I don't know, creature foretold or elemental thing, you know, some sort of thing,
prophecy.
Not like, yeah, prophesied thing. You're not like, oh, you're Wanda Maximoff. Like you're like the Sorcerer Supreme, the way that mantle is handed down in Doctor Strange. Like that's sort of, you know, what I was thinking of. Yeah. Either handed down or prophesied.
You're
sort
the chosen one, right?
And yeah. And is that thing a goddess rather than a witch? Do you know what I mean? There's also another line where I think Agnes says to Dottie, I mean, we're always wondering what Dottie is doing here, Emma Caulfield's character. Mm-hmm. There's a line where she goes, you know, Dottie, roses are divine. The use of divine there makes me wonder, like, sorry, I just really liked it.
I love your line readings. Agnes, your life's, you do such a good job, Joanna, with your Agatha line readings.
But the use of divine there, I mean, divination, but also like, is there, you know, are there goddesses here at play? Is that what we're going to be dealing with? And is Agnes going to be in service of a goddess in some way? I don't know. Just something I'm thinking about.
Maybe. I mean, one man's goddess is another man's witch. And I use man specifically since that's kind of the
stricture. I do think that's a role that Hayward is serving in all of this. Like, but, I think it is interesting that we have these like two powerful women, but that they're like the white guy is the like
obnoxious straight white cis guy who's like
corporate toolbar. So what is the Scarlet Witch is something that I'm really interested in learning in understanding what their interpretation in this world, what that means. You know what I mean? So
yeah. I mean, what is the difference between a goddess power or a god's power and magic, right? A magic wielder. It's sort of similar, except you worship one and you fear the other or hate the other. So I like your what you've picked up there.
All right. Let's see. So Joe says, this is to go back to, I mean, basically we got a lot of requests from, basically people don't want Catherine Hahn to leave the MCU.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of requests from like, is Agatha going to be a long-term villain? That came from Paul. Kat suggested that she should be like sort of a Loki style villain, which is like a villain we just like love to see them cause mischief. Someone else suggested Loki as an analog for Agatha, also in this idea of like Loki is ultimately serving Thanos, right? So even if there is a bigger bad, like even if there is a Mephisto or a nightmare or something like that, it doesn't necessarily mean that that character would take away from Agnes's power in this story or in the universe overall. Like, let's say she is serving a nightmare or a Mephisto or something like that. Maybe knowing that Wanda is the Scarlet Witch will change where her allegiance lies. And that could be the lifesaver sort of moment for her. But people just want Catherine Hahn to stay around. I'm going to float that ghost theory. I kind of like her. I would love her to just like pop up as she does in the comics and just sort of like bedevil Wanda in certain ways, like help her, but also make fun of her, sort of like she does in the last week's episode. I think that could be really fun.
Yeah. They had a very, well, speaking of ghosts, like very Ghost of Christmas Past thing going on there, right?
Yeah.
When they were exploring the different, traumas in her life, and she was like, it's time to go, right? Like, it's like, move along, Scrooge. I don't want her to go. She owns this part. Like, I could not, I mean, I guess obviously you could cast somebody else in this role, but there's something ironic about, Catherine Hahn in general. Like, she's very good at satirizing a type of person, you know, like the sassy sidekick kind of role, which I think she's been cast in a lot throughout her career. And this sort of is the culmination of that, where she's the sassy sidekick, the quirky neighbor, but she's secretly like the omnipotent warrior goddess who's now trying to understand this. I loved her in her big purple flowing, Disney's Descendants gown, like when she's hovering in the air and like her hair is all curled, like, and she's got like the cool eyeliner on and she's like, you're the Scarlet Witch. And like, I just loved seeing her at full power. And, I'd like her to stick around. And I think the Loki comparison is one I hadn't thought of, but yes, exactly. He was so fun in that part, Tom Hiddleston, that you just kind of got to keep him around.
All right. Unfortunately, I agree. I would love that for her. Okay. So we unfortunately have to wrap up, and we have so many great emails that we didn't get to. We had a lot of questions about Hayward and Sword and White Vision, that hopefully we can talk about in our finale episode. Really quick, want to answer Jamie's question. Jamie wrote in asking, like, there's this thing that's says Stark Industries on the side that's powering Wanda and it's covered in red glowy stuff. What is that?
That's powering White Vision, right?
White Vision, sorry. Yeah. That's the drone, that Wanda threw back at them that was sort of like covered in her, smeared in her magic. So, you know, it's a magic soaked drone. I do think it's worth noting that Hayward at one point is tracking, the decay signature of vibranium when he's tracking, Wanda's vision. Mm-hmm. And, that means that Wanda made vibranium, which is wild. Like, send her to Wakanda. She can do it all. So here's my last quick question for you. Cause full disclosure, we have to go into a meeting. How much can we expect from the finale? So Tanner writes in, I know people are expecting a lot from this final episode, but is there any way it ends with the introduction of Speed, Wiccan, a new Vision, a new Quicksilver, Agatha to possibly mentor Wanda, and a possible reveal of Mephisto? Obviously, we're getting Spectron / Photon with Monica Rambeau, but reading online this week, people are expecting multiple characters from this to exist long-term in the MCU. Do you think that is realistic in any way, Tanner? What do you think, Anthony?
I think some of that, obviously, is going to happen. I think much more likely to get, like, Spectrum, Photon, Monica Rambeau, superpower, origin story. I mean, we've already gotten the origin story, but we'll see her like at full power. Here's my thing about the kids is that they haven't had a life. Like, how much time has actually passed over the course of this show?
Right.
Like a week, a couple of weeks, like five episodes of a sitcom show. Like, so they aren't real. I mean, they're real to her, and I think they are. The point of this is to have them become real, but they're not like, they're like Vision in the sense that they haven't grown up, right? They haven't lived. And so I don't think we're going to get those full-fledged characters in the final episode of WandaVision. I think that's a journey that's going to come later. That's my guess. That's my feeling about it anyway. But as for the other things, yes, you know, I think we're going to see a showdown, obviously, with the White Vision. We're going to see Monica Rambeau power up. We'll get some resolution with Agatha Agnes, who I still think she's trying to, I think she's interested in this as a way of manifesting someone else.
I love the idea of, like, she needs the power to unlock the book, mm-hmm. and then in unlocking the book, it will unleash something.
Yeah.
Whether she intends it to or not. And that could be Al Pacino. No, it could be whatever it is, right? I love the theory that Dr. Stephen Strange is in the rabbit. It's one of my favorite theories that I've heard. Senor Scratchy and Stephen Strange have the same initials, as many people have pointed out. So there's that. I'm just spitballing some last minute theories. As for the big cameo, is Paul Bettany just talking about himself? Part of me thinks yes, that might be what we get, but part of me is also warming to the increasing buzz around this idea that we are going to get Patrick Stewart as Professor X in the end here to explain something about mutants or multiverses or something. Can't do a Dark Phoenix storyline without Professor X. So anyway, Patrick Stewart said he met with Kevin, but that he wasn't going to do any Marvel stuff. But I don't know. I'm just
never
feeling,
say
I feel
never
it
as Robert
in my fingers. And as for the boys, another repeated line that I noticed along with the lifesaver thing, that happened coming up a couple times was about how you can't control kids.
Mm.
Agnes herself says it a couple times, like, kids, you can't control them, like, whatever. And Wanda's magic doesn't work on the kids. Like, she can't get them to stop crying and stuff like that. Wanda's magic doesn't seem to work on the things she's created from her chaos magic. Like, if we think the stork is something she created, you know, her magic only goes so far on Vision. Her magic doesn't work on the kids. So maybe that inability to control the kids will be important. Yeah. Like, maybe then that means also Agatha's magic doesn't work on them. Like, in terms of those ropes that are around their necks right now. I don't know. We'll see. But
I would suggest people temper your expectations about, like, deep mythological revelations.
Sure.
And, because I think this final episode is going to be a conflict. It's going to be the battle between Wanda and Sword. And that is going to encompass Agnes and Photon Spectrum and Vision versus Vision, maybe. And then I think there's going to be an open-ended conclusion that leads us toward other things. You know, there'll be some resolution with Vision and Wanda and her grief. And then I think it's going to be, oh, okay, we've opened this book and now unleashed, you know, the multiverse or this monster. And that's going to be dealt with later.
I agree. Al Pacino's Mephisto will return in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. No. I do think there will be plenty of space for emotional stuff, though I do think this penultimate episode, since it was all about sort of emotion and trauma and grief, I do think the finale will be a little bit more action heavy. Like, they did a lot of the emotional groundwork here so that they could have room for some classic Marvel act three fight stuff, which is usually my least favorite part of a Marvel movie. Exactly. But we'll see.
One of the other questions, I know we have to wrap up, but one of the other questions we had was, like, is Hayward, like, is he in maybe an alien Kree, or does he have some sort of crazy deep background, and why is he trying to kill Wanda? That doesn't make sense. Our question, I forget who asked it in our list there, but why would he want to kill Wanda? That doesn't make sense. And I think he's clearly setting her up as the as his alibi, like, oh, that she created Vision, that she made Vision. Mm-hmm. He lied about her taking the body. He's been lying about her a lot. And so how do you cover up your lie but to destroy the person you're lying about? She can't really defend herself if she's annihilated. So that's why I think he wants to get rid of her.
Yeah, I do think part of that came from Charlie. And I do think part of Charlie's point was, like, it was a really silly lie to try to sell to Monica when, like, so many people at S.W.O.R.D. saw how that exchange with Wanda actually went. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was a bold of you, Hayward, to try to sell that lie. But, like, you know, that's he's got ambition and he's got a lot of fear after the snap. So that's a dangerous combination. All right, Anthony Breskin, I will talk to you again for the finale. But also a reminder to folks, you can email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Rich will be back for the finale discussion. But you can email us questions about the finale. You can also email us what it is you would like Anthony and me. Tell us what to do with our lives.
Tell us where to direct our chaos magic.
All right. Anything else you want to say, Anthony, until then?
I hope everybody enjoys the final episode. It's been a lot of fun talking about it with you each week. And I'm glad we got to share this because we'd be doing it on the phone otherwise.
It's true.
Yeah, sometimes Joanne and I are talking.
Even if your theory doesn't pan out, you can still have a fun time. And that's the fun of still watching and WandaVision. So, yeah.
All right, thanks for all the questions, everybody.
Bye. Bye to everyone, but especially Meta's kid. Bye.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
From PRX.